Hello, and welcome to episode 1 of Film Favorites. My name is Bryce Vales, and with me is my good friend Aaron Chase.
Hey, Bryce.
Hello, Aaron. I grew up with a love for the moving picture. Turner Classic Movies was one of the few television channels I would watch as a child, and I was raised with an uncommon understanding of classic Hollywood cinema. My father once said, "I would rather show my kid Goodfellas than Barney in the Search for the Golden Fucking Egg." I will always be appreciative of that sentiment. Aaron here is wishing to expand his knowledge of film and foolishly views me as an expert on the subject, instead of the mere admirer that I am. But, to that end, we will be counting down my 500 favorite films of all time and have a little discussion about them.
And I like movies. So I think this would be a good balance. We have 3 movies at a time?
That's right. Each episode will be counting down 3 films, starting at 500, right here, right now.
Okay.
Until we reach number 1, 2-3 years from now.
Yeah, this is going to be a while. And I don't know what your list is. I don't know anything that you're going to tell me.
Right.
And the rules are, we discuss the first 3 films, you describe them, and then I'm going to pick one of those films that we have to watch and then give you my piece on it.
That's right. And it has to be, if at all possible, one of the films that you haven't seen. Like,
yeah.
If you've seen one of them, we're not going to watch that.
Okay.
We're going to watch one of the ones you haven't seen, if at all possible.
Okay. Let's do this.
Let's do this.
All right. First 3 films.
First 3 films.
Are we doing it one at a time or all 3?
We're doing one at a time.
Okay.
Let's do
number
one at
500.
A time. Number 500 is director Danny Lehner's 2004 film, Harold and Kumar Go to White Castle.
Okay. Why? Why is that 500?
Why is that 500?
Yeah.
Because frankly, it's not good enough to be any higher. No, it's actually a surprisingly well-made comedy with a really good balance of comedy to drama. Like, there's a lot of comedies out there that, like, in the last act, just switch into, like, drama mode.
Yeah.
All of a sudden. And now, here's the message. And we're going to be really serious with very little humor for, like, 2 or 3 scenes in a row. And then just pound home what the message is, what we're trying to say. And then we'll end on something funny.
Right.
But this has a really nice balance throughout, actually, of, like, there's not a lot of drama, but it's there throughout. What is there?
If there's stakes.
There are stakes. There are not the most deep characters, but 3-dimensional characters that have motivations that aren't stereotypes, which is really funny. Another thing I like about the film is pretty much every character exhibits strong stereotypical character traits. But there's also twists, like things that would counter those. Like
Kumar,
you know, he is Indian.
Yes.
Who is being pushed into, like, a medical field.
Which he is good at.
Which he is good at. Stereotype.
Yes.
But he doesn't want that. Also kind of a stereotype, in a way.
It is a modern stereotype.
It's a modern stereotype. Yeah. But more so than that is his love of the devil's flower.
Yeah. He's a degenerate.
He is a degenerate. He is very big into other cultures.
Yes.
Another good example is like the Asian club.
Yeah.
That Harold doesn't want to be a part of. And then they're
wild and crazy.
Wild and crazy.
Yeah, we're wild and crazy guys. Yeah, the Harold is another stereotype that, like, he's Chinese, I want to say. Chinese or Korean or something.
I think John Cho's Korean.
So he's probably, the character's probably Korean then.
I can't remember. Let's assume.
He's Asian. He's Asian. It's a blanket.
He definitely is Asian.
He's very Asian. And he also exhibits those stereotypes of hardworking. He's a quieter between the two. But he's also just a dude. Like, when you think of the name Harold, that really sums up who he... He is quiet and reserved, but he's just kind of a guy. Like, he could have been any race and it wouldn't have mattered. For the sake of the film... I get why they're trying to point these stereotypes out and put them on their head, but he could have just been any dude.
Yeah.
Which is nice. Yeah, I'm probably not gonna, unfortunately, not gonna be able to pick that movie to watch because I've seen it so many times, and I am playing by the rules on this one. But I support that as your top, as your 500. I actually don't mind that.
I'm glad. Thank you. And one little thing. I don't know, because I know you're a big fan of, like, movie trivia.
Yeah.
So I think maybe this is one about the film that you don't know.
Okay.
Is, you know, their neighbors, Rosenberg and Goldstein?
Yeah.
The Jewish.
The Jews.
The Jews,
yeah.
As they referred to in the film. They were toying around with an idea of having, like, a little sidequel, like a spin-off film, all Rosencrantz and Guildenstern are dead, because their characters are named after Rosencrantz and Guildenstern.
Yeah.
And they're gonna, like, it was gonna be a film following those two characters during the events of this film.
Oh, that would have been, I would have loved that.
That would be great.
Yeah.
It's not gonna happen now, but I would watch that.
Yeah, they've aged out.
Yeah.
Well, do you think it's a, well, how far off of film do you want me to get? Because I was gonna get into the, you know, about the de-aging. How do you feel about that? Like, if they had de-aged those actors to do the role, how do you feel about that?
De-aging, like digital de-aging, has come a long way. Like, you look back at Tron Legacy, and it's like, ugh.
Yeah,
a little wonky, impressive in its own way, but wonky. Now it's getting, it's, there's still some digital sheen, some uncanny valley, but they are, like, walking up the valley. They're not just in the doldrums anymore. It's getting better.
Yeah.
So I'm fine with the idea of older actors having shots at some younger roles. If they can still do it, why not?
And then if you're reanimating an entirely dead human being,
that's a little bit more of a discussion.
Yeah. Okay. Well, we'll get to that when we get to that.
For now, though, we're getting to number 499.
Okay.
Dude, after this, we only have 498 movies to go. We're almost there. Jesus.
Okay, yeah.
Is director Jim Henson's
okay
1986 film, Labyrinth.
Okay. I know I watched it in college at one point with an ex-girl, obviously ex-girlfriend now, and obviously. I remember a lot of puppets because of Jim Henson. I remember David Bowie as a transgender before transgender was transgender.
I don't know if the character's transgender, but there is David Bowie.
There's a transgender vibe to David Bowie in Labyrinth from what I remember.
Interesting. I didn't pick up on that. Okay. There's some glamorous things going on, but that's just 80s
David Bowie. Yeah, David Bowie. Whatever. And I remember it being very dark.
There are some darker elements.
Okay.
It's certainly lighter than the film he made before that, Dark Crystal. But I'd call it actually rather lighthearted.
Okay. And how long is that one?
How long is it? Yeah. Off the top of my head, I can't remember.
What? Yeah, I should have asked this about Harold and Kumar, but what are the negatives? Yeah, can I ask about Harold and Kumar?
We'll go back to Harold and Kumar for a second.
Okay. What's the negatives of Harold and Kumar? Why is it so low on the list?
There are, Now, do keep in mind, okay, I should have prefaced this at the very beginning of the podcast.
Okay, well, it's fine.
That these are my favorite movies of all time. Not what I consider to be the best movies.
There is a distinction.
There is a very distinct
distinction. I feel like we'll learn a lot about you as a person through this.
Probably. Although I would reserve judgment until you get to, like, my top, at least the top half.
Okay.
250. Because those are the ones I really love.
You know, someone's going to listen to this and hate you for the fact that it's so on the list.
Oh, yeah. No, Labyrinth, that I'm sure I just, of the two viewers we have, viewers.
Yep.
I'm a film guy. Yes. I watch things.
Yes.
Two listeners, one of them is gone now because that's their favorite movie.
Yeah, for sure.
A lot of people love Labyrinth.
But what was the negative of
negative Labyrinth? For Harold and Kumar. A lot of the humor is rather
childish,
rather immature, which is fine.
Yeah,
it's not necessarily my kind of humor.
Right.
Like another example of stereotypes being subverted: the posh British girl.
Yeah, oh, taking shits,
battle shits specifically. It's like, you know, it's funny.
Yeah, As a teenager, that came out in 2004?
2004.
Yeah. As a teenager, when it first came out, that was hilarious to me. Now it kind of is gross.
Yeah, it was never my type of humor. A lot of the humor does work for me, but a lot of it is rather just not my cup of tea. Mm-hmm. And while it has some good points, it doesn't have anything that really jettisons it up. So there's not a lot of negatives so much as there's not a whole lot that propels the film into like my favorites. It's a decent comedy, mm-hmm. elevated by just a little bit more.
Okay. And then why is Labyrinth, what are the negatives of Labyrinth?
Let's get into the positives.
Oh, what are the positives?
Or maybe I start with the negatives. What do you think?
Let's start with the negatives and go to the positives.
I think I'm just going to juggle everything. Whatever okay. feels right.
That makes sense.
I don't want to pigeonhole myself.
I just, from what I remember, it was like a fantasy, mm-hmm. and there's a little girl, I think.
There's a young lady. She's like 14, 15, 16.
Okay.
Jennifer Connelly.
Mm. Is she attractive now?
Yes. No, she is. Jennifer Connelly is a beautiful woman.
We'll see.
All right. Well, to each their own. I think so. I'm sure other people disagree. Whatever. It doesn't matter.
Yes.
It has a lot of puppets, you're right. A lot of Muppets. It is Jim Henson.
She's very attractive. she's like... Oh, I remember her. Oh.
Yeah, you've seen her in a lot of stuff.
I've seen her in a lot of stuff.
Yeah.
She's like poised.
That's a good word for it.
Yeah, she's very poised.
She's very poised. She's a fine actress.
Yeah, she's never slouched ever. Her spine is straight.
It's because of the back brace.
Does she really have a back brace?
No,
my God. Okay, all right. Jennifer Connelly and she does things.
We're getting off the rails already.
Yeah,
Labyrinth.
Labyrinth.
Labyrinth. Labyrinth. It is a fantasy. It has some wonderful puppet work. Honestly, Labyrinth. That's a big reason why it's on the list. It's really imaginative stuff. That's really well done. Some very good effects. Great matte paintings. George Lucas was involved as a producer. Lucasfilm. Was involved, and they did a lot of the matte paintings and some of the effects, although all the puppet stuff was done by the Jim Henson Company. But really imaginative. There's one great song and a bunch of okay songs.
Okay. This is a musical.
It's a musical.
Okay.
It's a musical. Magic Dance. I mean, everyone who knows Labyrinth knows that's the great song.
Uh-huh.
And everyone agrees.
Magic Dance.
Magic Dance.
Okay.
What
brings it down, though?
The plot is kind of all over the place. Lots of scenes just kind of stop and go. It's elevated by, or propped up by like, gags and little bits here and there. But like the story just kind of tumbles along.
Right.
A lot of the performances are so-so.
Is it for kids?
Yeah, it's for kids. It definitely has a kid-centric.
It was in the 80s?
86.
86. I'm going to guess it was rated PG.
That's a good guess. I believe it was.
But it still says shit and probably some horrific stuff for kids in it because it was the 80s.
again, it's actually rather lighthearted compared to a lot of the fantasy stuff. Like, it's not as dark as Neverending Story or Dark Crystal or anything like that. It is certainly more lighthearted than those. I can imagine some very young kids maybe being disturbed, but like...
That's fine.
But
they need a little bit of that little rustling.
That's right.
I think that's healthy when kids watch something a little over the line for them.
That's why we're so well adjusted.
Yep. I think you just made the quote that your dad would have rather have you watch Goodfellas than Barney, so... Jesus.
Yeah.
That's pretty horrifying.
Oh, it's great.
Okay, it was that movie was disturbing to me as an adult when you showed it to me, so I can't imagine as a kid. That's a whole other
thing. Yeah, I think I probably saw that when I was 9 or 10.
Oh my God, really?
Probably 10.
Oh, fuck.
Maybe 11. Yeah, 10 or 11, probably.
Oh my God, okay, well, that's the whole thing.
We're not to Goodfellas.
Yeah, we're not to Goodfellas, and I'm sure it's in the list.
It might be.
Okay.
It might be.
If Harold and Kumar is 500 and Goodfellas isn't on the list...
It's 501. Just barely didn't make
it. Yeah, just barely. Okay.
Yeah.
And then I'll tell you. Okay. After you tell me by the third one, I want you to guess which one I would pick to watch ideally.
Okay, I think I know.
Okay, well, what's the third one?
Okay, the third one. Number 498.
Okay.
Is director Kathryn Bigelow's 1987 film, Near Dark.
I've never seen it, and I don't know anything about it.
Very good. Near Dark. Don't Google it. We're talking about it.
Okay, I was going to see what it looked like.
You don't get that luxury.
Oh, my God.
This is a podcast. This is a audio only.
Audio-centric.
That's right.
So when we watch the movies, I can't watch it. I can only listen.
That's right.
Okay.
They can't watch it.
Right.
So why should you?
Shit. Sorry. Okay, so what is it called?
It's called Near Dark.
Okay.
It's a Western vampire film.
Okay.
Probably, maybe not. I don't know if it's the first piece of vampire Western mashup fiction, but it's certainly an early example.
Multiple Western vampire fiction.
Oh yeah, there's a great comic book that I think Stephen King was involved with, American Vampire, that has a lot of Western stuff.
Okay.
There's a few different examples, but have you seen The Lost Boys?
No.
Oh, all right.
Yeah, there's a lot of movies I haven't seen, so I'm getting ready for this.
This is going to be an exciting time, folks. But for all you listening, it's basically Lost Boys, but instead of it being sort of comedy, action comedy centric, this is a more of a drama, gritty, dusty, grimy. Stars Lance Henriksen, Bill Paxton. I think the leads are Adrian Pastar and Jenny Wright. But it's a lot of people compare it to Twilight, which I don't get.
Okay.
It's like if...
Was it 87?
87. It's a romance involved, which is why a lot of people... But romance is just kind of a core part of vampire fiction in general. So yeah. I don't know what they're getting at. But it's a guy who... gets involved with a vampire gal.
Okay.
And kind of gets involved with her vampire family, which is just these roaming good-for-nothings.
Okay.
And
it's more of a drama?
It's more of a drama, some horrific violence.
Okay. It was rated R?
Oh, yes.
Okay.
Oh, yes.
All right.
Very R. But it has some good performances. Bill Paxton is at his most...
Bill Paxton?
Asshole Bill Paxton.
Oh, that's good.
This is right after he did Aliens, and he just takes that to just a bigger asshole extreme.
Okay.
And Lance Henriksen plays this old, dusty, Confederate vampire. But it's set in modern day, I should say. This is it's like a modern day Western.
So it's modern day for the 80s.
Yes.
So we have a vampire Western that is set in modern day of 1987 that is a romance action drama?
Romance drama horror, I would say.
Romance
with some
drama
elements.
Horror.
Yeah.
With Bill Paxton.
With Bill Paxton.
Okay. What do you think I'm going to pick out of these three? I mean, obviously I can't pick Harold and
Kumar. You're not going to pick Harold and Kumar.
I would have picked Harold and Kumar.
I'm glad you don't have that option, Aaron.
I know.
This is about expanding your horizons.
It is, and I'm forcing myself to do this.
That's right.
Okay, so between Labyrinth and what is Near Dark. Near Dark. What do you think I'm leaning towards right now?
I would imagine you'd pick Near Dark.
Okay, why?
You've seen Labyrinth. It seemed like you weren't that enthused.
When I heard it.
Your memories of it.
Yeah.
And Near Dark is new. And it has Bill Paxton.
It does have Bill Paxton. Well, right now I'm definitely leaning towards Near Dark, but my reasoning is mostly because of the way you describe Bill Paxton. Because of how fucking absurd all of it sounds. I'm curious now. With Labyrinth, I get it.
Yeah.
I get it. I don't think I can get Near Dark unless I watch Near Dark. So I think that's going to be... I don't know how long we've been recording or how long you wanted this to go.
About 20 minutes, which is good.
And then we can watch it and discuss it.
Yeah,
yeah, I think I'm going to go with Near Dark on this one.
Okay.
All right.
I hope you enjoy it.
What do you think I'm gonna feel about it?
I don't want to say. I want you to go in.
Okay. Going pure.
I mean, you already know too much.
Okay.
Go and watch it, and I just... Yeah, your honest opinion. I'm interested in that.
Okay, let's do it.
Honest here. All right. Let's go watch Kathryn Bigelow's 1987 film, Near Dark. So, Aaron.
Yes, Bryce?
What'd you think about Near Dark?
I know that sounded negative. Overall, a positive experience.
Really?
Yeah. Overall, entertaining. It was entertaining. Mm-hmm. That's how, the best way I could describe it is entertaining. I would not say it was a good movie. In fact, I wouldn't even call it a film. It was a movie.
Okay. Oh, okay. Dude, yeah. You're one of those guys. Oh, yeah. That's a movie, not a film.
Taxi Driver is a film. And Near Dark is a movie. Is that fair?
I mean, I get what you're getting at.
There's a distinct... It's like improv and stand-up. They're both forms of comedy, but they're different.
Sure.
Do you know what I'm saying?
I know what you're saying. Okay. I know what you're saying. And by that sort of metric, I agree.
Okay. Bill Paxton was hands down the standout performance. He stole the show.
Very fun.
Yeah. Fun. Every time he was on screen, I enjoyed watching him. Our protagonist was perfect for being a bland slate of a person, in my opinion.
He has a little bit of an arc.
But for the most part, it felt like he was supposed to be a good, regular guy. And you just live vicariously as much as you can through what he's experiencing.
Sure. I disagree. I feel like he starts out... I know we were commenting during the film about how creeper he was at the beginning.
Jeez, yeah.
I don't know if you remember that.
Oh, I remember.
I think that wasn't just, like, a product of the times.
You think that was on purpose?
I think that was on purpose.
Okay, well then, to give some context to those who haven't seen the smash hit... Near Dark.
Catherine Bigelow. Director Catherine Bigelow, who went on to be the first and so far only woman to win Best Director.
Of what?
For The Hurt Locker.
Oh, she went from this to The Hurt Locker? Good for her. She improved as a filmmaker. Congrats.
She's a very good filmmaker.
Yeah, because this is a bad movie.
I disagree.
Okay.
I do not think it's a bad movie. I think it's a perfectly decent movie.
I think my feelings on that will change as I watch more of these, because it's really hard for me to disconnect from the era it was made in.
I hope that's what a big part of this,
I think that's this what
series it is. Becomes about. I want you to be able to appreciate sort of older style films.
Yeah. It's not that I don't appreciate it. It's because I do appreciate what this is. There was the quaintness. In fact, my favorite part of it, and we talked about this a few times, was during every action scene, there wasn't music or crazy. No one's doing flips or crazy shit. There's no music. Mm-hmm. And that was very intense because of it. Like, when they go into the bar and they just wreck shop, I was like... And then there's no rock or rap music playing behind. So you don't... It's not like a... It doesn't feel fun. It feels very scary.
I think that's probably the standout scene.
Yes.
In the film is definitely that bar scene.
Yeah, bar scene was great. Yeah. Our female protagonist, she is terrible.
Not a great performance.
No, not at all. And the writing was weird. It was very blunt, especially in the beginning.
But no, the writing did not help her performance along. Bite? Dying? I'm scared. It's rough.
Speaking of being a product of the times, most of these people get murdered because they're hitchhiking. And the whole movie, I'm like, guys, maybe we should stop fucking hitchhiking.
That's the moral of the story, really.
Yeah, that's really clearly what they're saying here. Stop hitchhiking. Yeah, no, actually, every time someone was in trouble, they were hitchhiking, almost. Except for the bar, I think.
The bar, Homer, the child vampire, that first guy that he kills, he like pretends to be...
Oh, that's a whole other situation. But for the most part, it was hitchhiking that did everybody in.
A good three quarters of the deaths in this film can be attributed to hitchhiking.
Yeah. And the, again, the time. So in the very beginning, I don't think this is spoilers or much of an issue.
I mean, it's okay. I think it's okay. Just, we're going to be spoiling some stuff, perhaps.
Yeah. When he approached... So when our Caleb is our protagonist and May is our female.
She's
what would she be?
She's
definitely a love interest, but for writing terms, she's an ally.
Oh, okay. So we have Caleb, he's our protagonist, and May is our ally. Mm-hmm. And Caleb approaches May, who is standing, holding an ice cream cone. I don't know why that was happening. Now that I learned that they don't like...
I feel like she was just trying to lure some guy that night.
And she just happened to actually like Caleb.
Yeah.
Okay. So he goes over to her in the creepiest way possible and asks for a bite of her ice cream, which was weird. He's
dying for a bite.
Yeah, he's gonna bite your ice cream. And then he gets her in the car and they're driving, he's driving her home because it's still nighttime, so she has to get home. And the point where I was like, this is, whether it's a product of the times or not, I can't get past how weird this is. She they're kissing, they're making out, then she stops because she doesn't want to hurt him. And then he stops in the middle of the road after she's clearly been like, I need to get home.
Yeah.
I need to get home. This is very dire for her. And now seeing the end of what happens to the vampires, I can see why she's freaked out.
They explode.
Yeah. Vampires explode when they're in...
the sunlight for too long.
Yeah, you didn't see the Twilight. It didn't happen in Twilight, but yeah. Twilight got it wrong, clearly.
They sparkle.
They sparkle. Yeah. But, So that he stops in the middle of this dirt road, in the middle of nowhere, probably like 5 a.m., probably?
Just before dawn.
Just before dawn. And she's been like, take me home.
I need to go home right now. She's very serious, very intense. Yes. Yes.
He stops the truck, takes the keys out of the ignition, and says something to the akin of...
You gotta give me a kiss first.
Yeah, like, I'm not taking you anywhere till you give me a kiss. And then he playfully... drops the keys in his shirt, and then she kisses him and then turns him into a vampire and then runs away. But it was like, I know that's product of the times, but it's going to take me a while, I think, to like be able to disconnect from how creepy and weird that is.
Disconnecting is different from being cool with it, so it's okay.
Yeah. I'm not mad at it. I'm not like...
Definitely don't have to be okay with it, though.
I'm not offended by the material. I recognize and understand, like, this is the 80s, and I guess that's fine in the 80s. I don't know. I don't know how you watch that movie. I don't know how any reasonable person watches that and thinks, yeah, it makes sense. I would do that, too.
Again, I think early, like, his kind of creepiness early on was intentional to set up his character and a little bit of growth.
Yeah. I hope so.
I'm fairly confident.
I'm getting the vibe, though, that a lot of these movies are going to have scenes like this where I'm like, what is going on, guys? What are we doing? I'm pretty sure that's going
to
happen.
In regards to...
For the films that are going to be older. Where it's that they're present... He's our protagonist. And I know that he has to have an arc, and that's where he starts at. But the way they present him is still charming.
Right.
He's still... There's something... Even it
might not be something that's cool, but we're on his side.
Yeah, he's still kind of... But like when I watch Goodfellas and I see horrifying shit, it's fine because these are mobsters.
Yeah.
But they're... And they don't ever... In Goodfellas, they never paint anybody as like, oh, he's a... Nobody is safe in Goodfellas. Everyone's kind of a piece of shit.
Yeah. And this movie... Everyone's got their hands dirty.
Yeah. In this movie, Caleb's supposed to... We're supposed to like this guy, and he's... Basically, not rape. What would you call that?
That's assault.
Yeah, that's assault. He assaults her.
He's trying to, you know, forcing a woman who's begging to go home.
Yeah.
To kiss him before.
Yeah. I guess. Yeah. It was weird.
It's creepy. It's off-putting.
Yes.
And I don't think we're supposed to be like ho-ho-ho with it. Maybe. I don't know.
I don't know. I really don't know. Like I want to talk to older people about it. Like, I want to show this to someone who is how old? Like, someone who was like a teenager during this film. How old will they be now?
Oh yeah, forties.
So I want to see a 40-year-old watch this now.
That's how I got my first wife.
Like, I wonder if they're going to be like, oh, the good old days, or if they're going to be like, oh, wow.
I mean, it depends on the person.
Yeah, definitely. But. That, I think, in watching all of these movies, my prediction is it's going to take me a long time to be able to just disconnect from that and remember, like, this is the 80s or the 60s or whatever it is. And the other thing is, and it's going to bother me, and it didn't bother me too much in this because they're in fucking rural Kentucky?
Oklahoma,
they're
Texas.
Oklahoma, Texas. Like, they're in areas where there's just not a lot of black people or any other types of people. But I think it's going to take me a bit to get used to that as well. I'm sure we're going to run into a film that's set in New York where everyone's an old white guy.
It's true. Lots of older films, mostly white guys.
Yeah, and okay, so in this movie, I want to say there's a black girl.
Two black girls.
Both black girls?
I believe they were both black.
Oh, good for them. They died.
Well, we don't know if they died.
Yeah, Bill Paxton.
Bill Paxton got in that car. They're dead.
Yeah, they're dead.
They seem nice, too.
They did seem very sweet. Then there was the truck driver.
Yeah, he was also a pretty cool guy.
He was a cool guy. And then there was a black dude in the background being arrested. When you watch the movies, all of the extras, I don't know. I know you want to keep this to film, so I'm going to broaden this and I'll make it quick.
Fine, go for it, man.
But I really think media affects the way we perceive things in a really subtle, subconscious way. And when you watch it, and if you're paying attention to who is an extra and what they're doing as an extra, it subliminally sends a lot of messages, and it says a lot about how that the time is perceived. Everywhere our main characters went, every extra was an old white guy. Every extra. Everyone looked about, all the extras looked about 30 or 40, and they're white dudes. And that's weird. That's really weird, because the extras are meant to fill out this world and make this feel like, what universe are we in right now? And in this universe, everybody is, like, everyone else is just hiding? I don't know, does that make sense?
It makes sense, and I'm not trying to excuse it.
Yeah.
But
it's the times.
Yeah, honestly, for the longest time, until relatively recently.
Until 2015.
Until 2015. Mm-hmm. The standard human being.
Yeah.
Is a white guy.
Yes.
In films.
Older white guy. Not even younger, though. Always older.
A lot of times older, but generally speaking.
Generally speaking.
White guy.
So I'm going to do my best to really just accept that this is just what it is. But it is distracting for me.
I get that.
but outside of that, I wouldn't recommend it. I would be, you know what? It's it's a relatively slow film for, I think, the average film watcher.
No. I would agree. And you'll notice that with a lot of older films. Yeah. Especially, like, 1987 isn't that long ago, really. Stuff from the early 80s back. Like 70s, 60s, 40s, 30s, 20s.
In the whole beginning, I was like, cut the fat, guys. What are we doing? Like, in the very opening shot is Caleb, and he's just driving.
Yeah.
And it doesn't feel like a Quentin Tarantino, the character's just driving, where there's, like, sleekness to it. He's doing this for some reason, whether I understand it or not. It mostly was just like, oh, he's driving at night. It didn't set a tone for me. I didn't learn anything about the guy. I just knew he was driving, if that makes sense.
It makes sense. A lot of times opening credits you have
stuff like that.
This is kind of fillery stuff, but I disagree. I think it was setting the tone.
Oh, really?
We're getting dusk. It's near dark.
Yeah,
that's true. We start at dusk. We get into the night. I think it does build tone. It's kind of, dusty. It's lonely.
I just didn't know what was to come.
Sure.
I guess. Overall, though, I did enjoy it.
I am pleasantly surprised by it.
Why are you surprised?
I mean, like you said, it is relatively slow. It's not a terribly
For what type of film it is, it's slow.
Right.
For an action vampire horror film.
You'd think it would be a pretty snappy movie, yeah. Dusk Till Dawn or something. It is not. It is more of a somber.
Yes. But you're pleasantly surprised I liked it.
Because it is slow, and it is... It's got some cheese.
Yeah, no, I don't... There is something endearing and quaint about it. Like, in modern cinema, everything feels very big. Even a smaller indie film feels grand compared to this.
Well, I think there's been a lot of advancements in filmmaking.
Yeah.
not techniques so much as technology.
Yeah,
it's become cheaper and lighter. Like here, they're lugging around
crazy
film cameras.
Yeah,
and it's just the technology we have available, even to low budget independent filmmakers. And again, this was an indie movie.
Yeah.
Basically, it was a very very low budget movie. The what you can do nowadays is so much more. If that was made today by the same people, in that same headspace, even, it would be slicker.
Yeah, it'd be really slick. There, I can appreciate 80s specifically. There's this quaint feeling about it. There is this small, intimate, I don't call this, this wasn't claustrophobic, and there's a lot of wide space in it, but it was just a, just quaint. And I can appreciate and respect that. So I did enjoy it. It's like when you popped in Tremors, however long ago you popped in Tremors.
Yeah.
It was like, this is goofy and silly, but there's something endearing about it. So I think the best way to describe this movie was silly and ridiculous and a little disturbing.
Oh, certainly.
And endearing. Endearing in its in how quaint it was. It is. That's... I would recommend it for anybody that can handle cheesy 80s movies. That's what I'd recommend.
I think that's fair. I think that's fair. As long as you know what you're getting into ahead of time. This is not, like I said, this is not The Lost Boys.
Whatever The Lost Boys
Whatever is. That is. That's I right. You haven't seen it.
I've not seen it. I'm assuming it has something to do with vampires.
It's this movie, but more of a comedy and less of a horror.
I like that.
A lot of people do.
Really?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Lost Boys. A lot of people like Lost Boys.
Oh, okay. I'll watch it.
Well, Aaron.
Yeah.
Thank you for watching Not Lost Boys with me.
Mm-hmm. Was it Near Night?
Near... I can't remember.
Near Dark?
Near Dark. You got it.
Yeah, it was Near Dark.
It was Near Dark.
It was Near Dark. All right.
Well, Aaron, until next time.
Is that how we'll end it? Till next time?
Until we could.
All right, I'm fine with that. Till next time.
Till next time.
This has been a Buddy System presentation of Film Favorites.